This is the Gary V Audio Experience.
Hi, Gary. How are you?
I'm well, Michelle. How are you?
Amazing. So this is our second Fuck Yeah Fridays on a Thursday. First and only one that's going to be on a Thursday, where we talk to founders and give them relevant advice on exactly what's happening right now. We had a great first episode last week, and I'm excited to see the founders that that join us this week.
I agree. I thought the episode went extremely well. Let's give a huge shout out to everybody in the LinkedIn family out there. Let's take a look here. McMahon and Milan and Krishwan and Isaac and Esty, Rob, great to see all of you. Keep the comments coming, your questions, insights. Justin Long's in the building. A real fun part of this show is the live LinkedIn community that watches along with us. Lizette, good to see you, Susan. I'm really excited. I thought the level of conversation was very high level, and I'm excited about it. And Michelle's face is frozen for me, so I will continue to talk. Producers, if you guys want to jump in, I'm just going to talk and say hi to Ollie and Johnny and Vareed and Samuel and Dana Jacobson and Omar, great to see you. Kamalaf, great to see you. There you are.
There I am. I don't know what happened there. Like a little network problem. It looks like we're back though.
Yeah, so I was just saying hello to everybody who's tuned in on LinkedIn. Please, everybody on LinkedIn, hit the share. Take the URL right now and share it on Twitter and other places. Really, really fun. But let's get into it.
Yeah, let's get into it. So would love to bring on our first guest, Anna Peterson, the CEO of Zenimals.
Wow.
Hi, hello. How are you, Anna?
I'm so great. How are you guys?
Good. Would love to kind of a quick, 30-second pitch on you and your business.
Yeah, sure. So I created a screen-free meditation device. Our first product was for children. It's in the shape of a little turtle. It plays 9 guided meditations at the press of a button and 3 sleep soundtracks. It's an FDA-approved food-grade silicone shell, so it's a super safe product. It's removable. The shell is dishwasher safe. There's a speaker and an earphone jack for audio options. Hospitals, schools, and other institutions are instilling them as programs for mindfulness and social emotional learning for children. And then recently just launched a teen and adult device. So those are going into general hospitals, and we hope to branch out into the military and the nursing home community as well.
That's amazing. And it's like, it sounds like you've made it a $1 million business already.
I have. It was amazing. I was telling some of the other people backstage. It was I officially started marketing in March of 2020, and it was an unbelievable time in the world. And just being there for people was a really magical experience, and quite overwhelming. There was a huge sense of responsibility that I felt, and then also being there, I support 5% of the profits go to Precious Dreams Foundation. And that was like, they were instrumental last year in helping children in foster care. And so being a part of that conversation as well it's been wonderful. As horrible as the last however many months we've been doing this now.
Yeah.
Ben, I think it's been pretty magical for the mental health space and bringing awareness to, the fact that even pre-pandemic, the second leading cause of death for kids aged 10 to 14 was suicide. This was pre-pandemic. Like, this was a conversation we should have been having 5-10 years ago. Yeah. We're a little late, And so I think, I guess better late than never, but happy again, just to be here and be a part of it.
That's cool. Awesome.
So what are your questions for us today?
Yeah, so I am still running the show by myself. I have no full-time employees. And so I have a lot of great consultants in place for accounting. I have a great 3PL. And so I think my biggest pain point right now is B2B sales. That's been really difficult trying to build that team, but also supply chain. I do manufacture in China, and as you all know, that has come with some severe difficulties this year. And so I guess my question would be, who do you think my first hire should be at this stage in my game?
So I can weigh in first, and then we're gonna see what Gary has to say. So I think for me, you actually want to look for like a true second line to you, jack of all trades that can figure out anything, not afraid to get their hands dirty, that you can build that level of trust with. It's great that you've used like consultants in key areas, like, you know, a jack of all trades is not your best accountant. But really, like, this is a super hard part for every founder where they realize that they cannot infinitely scale themselves. And it's really hard and it's really stressful where every customer service email, every time a problem happens. And so that person sometimes takes a hard time to find, but they're someone that wants to, they're willing to build a business. You should be willing to give them a piece of equity if they turn out really well. But that is like so, so, so critical. And I actually meet a lot of founders that get to, you know, a couple $1 million in sales. I actually met one recently, was at 10 and just could not take herself out of the business. And you just hit this point where you cannot get any bigger unless you can learn to trust other folks. So it's a critical point. If you get it wrong the first time, remember that you can certainly move on and hire someone else, because I know it's scary, but that's what I would say.
That's great.
Amazing. And for me, I think, yes, I agree with everything Michelle said. I think there's a lot of validity there. What are you worst at, and or what do you most dislike? If I asked you right now, what do you most dislike in your week to week? Forget about day to day, because I don't think that's consistent enough. Like, you know, like in a month, like what do you just genuinely not like? Out of all the things, what do you not like?
That's an awesome question. I think on any given day, I think there are many things. I love development, but the supply chain I find very, very stressful. Those logistics are tough. I think financials, I don't like it probably because I'm not super good at it. And it takes me a lot of time, and I love efficiency, and that takes me extra time to understand and grasp. And so I get frustrated there. So probably financials and supply chain are my things that I could probably do without.
That's
my day to day.
That's your hire.
Okay.
If you're lucky enough to find somebody who can do both, which is not inconceivable, people go into corporate mindset too fast when they're small.
Right.
Like, you're doing a ton of things on paper. I don't know what you were doing before, but on paper, it might have not seemed like you could or should do all these things, but you do it out of necessity, right? When you start a company. Yeah. I think I would look for somebody for supply chain.
Yeah.
And then literally interview and like literally post on LinkedIn and say, I'm looking for supply chain, comma, small company. How, like, are you an accountant by trade? Or like, there's this concept that people are one thing is very corporate.
Right.
But in startup land, like
everything, chief everything officer, the CEO.
I think you can find somebody who does supply chain and finances.
Okay.
I'm convinced you can. I actually think that they have a lot of similarities a human. And so I think that straight man or woman is exactly who you're looking for.
Okay. Awesome. Great. And then my second question. So I haven't taken any outside funding to date. Do you guys think at this stage that it's worth giving up some equity to be able to scale quickly, to build an entire team and do the bigger things and throw, you know, some more at marketing than I'm currently doing, you know, risking, you know, some bouts of, you know, lack of profitability and things like that? Do you think that would be a wise move or not quite yet?
Michelle, I think this is so in your zone, and then I'll follow up.
Yeah, sure. You know, look, I'm biased, right? The whole reason we built ClearCo is because I believe that when you do the work as the founder, you should own your company. Because the reality is that investors are going to put in money. They're going to do absolutely nothing to build your business, and you are going to be left doing all of the work. And so it doesn't seem like you're giving up much in the early days. It's like, oh, I'm giving up 5 or 10 or 25% of my company, and it can be so much bigger. But my gut is that you will be successful. I mean, if you took something from idea to product to prototype to 1 million sales, like, most people never, ever, ever get there. And so owning your own is, you not only give up a piece of your, come up a piece of control. And that's really problematic when you don't feel like you control your own destiny when people that don't have the same information you have are telling you to make decisions on your business. And so we're a big fan of obviously being able to use capital so you can still invest more into marketing. You could still, you know, be fueling that growth. But at the end of the day, you know, paying 6% for that capital versus, you know, giving up a piece of control and your company. That being said, there are amazing investors out there. If you have someone super value add, I suggest you doing a ton of homework. It's like a marriage with no sex. You should really like that person before starting to work with them and really understand that they want to spend the kind of time, and it won't be the same as you, but they want to spend true time and true thought building your business.
That's great.
You said something that really caught my attention. I don't think businesses should really worry about profitability besides making payroll and paying their bills, mm-hmm. unless they are on the precipice of selling and are going for that, or there's some erroneous events in that human being's life where they just need the money. And I don't mean I need a second home or I need a Tesla. I need a Tesla, right? So I think a lot of founders worry about the optics of profitability because they're told to, but they misunderstand the timing. Like, you should not shit your pants when you're 57, but you definitely are allowed to, you know, shit your pants when you're one. And yeah. I think a lot of companies start making these decisions at 1 and 2 years old that don't make sense for a 1 or 2 year old company.
Right.
Like, I spent most of my time trying to make VaynerMedia and Wine Library, my two family businesses, my family business and my business, as little profit as possible, because I want to pour back in to build as big of a business as possible.
Sure. Yeah.
So like when, you know, hurt profitability or things that need, you know, like if you're not, that means you're playing defense at such a young age.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other thing that I would, the last thing I would share, Anna, is that, you know, I was a bootstrapped entrepreneur for the first 10 years of my career, got lucky enough to sell one of my companies to Groupon, and it was the only reason I got to build other things. Is that I actually, you know, I had two co-founders. I owned a third of the company. We had a 10% ESOP pool. Honestly, I remember doing the math. And even if we had raised a seed round or a series A, like, you're looking for a $25, $50 million outcome, because again, your investors get their money back first, right? So if you get $1 million into your business and your business only sells for $1 million, they get all their money back and you are left with nothing. And there is a true downside case. And so it also just depends on your personality type. Like, for me, I wanted to know my downside case is like, okay, like, I still own a third of this business, right? And that really did matter to me. But I think it was game changing in my career that I was able to retain, you know, equity at an early age. And I get it. It's just a much higher risk path to take another move. And I actually think there now are capital sources available that can allow you to grow without doing that.
Yeah, that's amazing. That's great. Cool.
Awesome.
Anna, what's the biggest difference right this minute in the consumer part than when you launched with success? Competitive landscape, demand, evolution, staleness, like, you know, growth. Like, what's the biggest difference right now on the consumer lens? Like,
Yeah, I think if I understand the question correctly, I think learning that this is a seasonal product, which I think is the strangest thing.
No way.
Yeah, fascinating.
What's even people buy meditation apps?
I don't know if it's the price point or if it's because it's a physical product, but it's very, like, summer was very, very slow. People were traveling, like, kids were staying up late. Parents didn't care that they were having problems sleeping because they could sleep in and, you know, during the day. As soon as school started back up, it was like the moon again. Holidays are bananas, which is like, that was a new game for me that I realized last year. I was not anticipating that at all. There's a lot of ebb and flow throughout the year. And I think it was
interesting. This is where marketing really, 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 really matters.
Yes.
And in two ways, doubling down on key moments.
Correct.
And then a lot of companies go cold when they think it's not season. This is where I completely exploded my dad's business. People would restart marketing in September and October.
Yeah.
And I marketed like crazy in July and August, and my dad was freaked out.
Yeah.
Because I was building awareness for September.
Yeah.
So, right. So like if you start doing content in mid-July that says things in the copy like, hey, click it for a calendar reminder to make sure on August 30th, you're ready to like buy our product. Like just notice how clever and like how you're like just that.
Yeah.
Just a piece of content. Like, does your kid sleep well? Da, da, da. And then like, here's a calendar. I know literally you're being empathetic to them. The copy is, I know you guys are in the summer, enjoy it, staying up late, sleep in. Click this link to put this in your Google calendar for September 1st to make sure you'd be stunned what kind, like that little. Right.
That's so cool.
I think so.
Yeah.
There you go.
But I didn't get here with my looks, Anna. Like this is like this is the shit I do. It's really it's about things like that. I also think Anna, I also think content from your customers is huge.
Yeah.
I think you should send an email out to everybody who ever bought and said, if you make a TikTok with our product, please email it here and randomly some of you will XYZ.
Yeah. Yeah, TikTok is not a platform that we're on yet. And I am like a banging my head against the wall trying to get that going because I think it's a huge missed
opportunity. You need to do that immediately. You're one TikTok away, one random TikTok that you're not even thinking about away from having a totally different business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The amount, I mean, TikTok's explosion is 38 to 50 right now.
Yeah. It's unbelievable. I think and that's where like I think bandwidth comes in and things like that. But this just needs to go to the top of the list. And like
the other thing that companies make a mistake on is they don't realize the moment. TikTok virality to get 12 million views on a video is going to go away in 24 months, and you're going to miss the window.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's absolutely. Well, Anna,
Michelle, I apologize. Anna, you need to prioritize that to number one. Anything that allows you for brand explosion at high upside, low investment, brand, not sales, brand explosion, high upside, low investment needs to be the number one thing you prioritize.
Yeah.
And because it's not a sales conversion for a DTC brand, TikTok is down the totem pole.
Right.
Because people thinking conversion.
Yeah. I definitely do. Yeah. Awesome. All right.
That's great advice. Okay. So you have a few ideas around new hires, around TikToks, around what should be the top of the priority list. And we're wishing you all the best luck.
Thank you. Thank you both so much. I really
appreciate it. Hold on, Anna, real quick. William Patrick in the comments, it says, I'm your guy for supply chain. Travel. Wow. There it
amazing.
Is.
Amazing.
That's amazing.
William, I think you found him.
Thank you. Look. Amazing. Thank you. I will.
Awesome.
Thank you guys.
Cheers.
Cheers.
Bye.
Okay.
That was fun.
That was really fun. I, as a quick interlude here, I heard your NFT was sold at Christie's this week.
Tomorrow.
That's exciting.
Tomorrow, my five original drawings are being sold. So not the NFTs like curio cards and art blocks. The actual art.
Yeah.
I am an artist that
you
is sold at Christie's.
You used your best Sharpie as you did them?
I am an artist. Let's keep going.
That's amazing. Good for you. We're all cheering you on, Gary. Okay. We got Lindsay. Have you on, Lindsay?
Hello, everyone. So nice to meet you both. This is just such an honor. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Lindsay, I think Michelle was chopping when she introduced you, so maybe you can introduce the company one more time, and then we'll get going.
Sure. I'm Lindsay with Green Wallscapes. We create preserved moss walls and ship them all over the U.S. and Canada.
Cool.
We do projects. We'll do probably about 300 to 350 projects this year. Some like the size behind me, you know, small, lots of different designs. We also do work with succulents and other things like that. What's great, and the solution that we've created, completely by accident, by the way, is no watering, no special light requirements. So it works really well in a lot
any of part of the homes.
Yeah, and homes and offices all over the place. So
it looks beautiful.
Thank you. That means so much to me. Wow.
How much are they?
There's a price per square foot where they range. So like the pieces behind me, each one of these is about $800, because they're all, you know, custom handmade.
Yeah.
Pieces.
Yeah. Beautiful.
But then we also have where we really make our money is large scale commercial applications of material. So, we've worked with companies like Starbucks and Stella Artois and like a lot of major, huge real estate development firms and things like that. We do their lobbies. We do, you know, all sorts of different tenant improvement spaces and things like that. So we have, you know, just me and my four team members, have done work with some crazy brands. We can't even believe it sometimes.
Good for you.
Yeah. And so anyway, I wanted to ask you guys some questions about hiring and retaining talent in this very tight market.
Totally.
Clearly, what we do, there's no school. There's no Moss school. So we have to train people, but they have to have sort of an aesthetic eye. They have to have, and they also have to be okay with like physical, labor. There's a lot of lifting and moving and all that kind of stuff that goes with.
You need to make an incredibly smart upfront filter for applicants. Mm-hmm. You should have a page on your site where you and your team have an incredible video that's 2-3 minutes long where you really go deep into this.
Okay.
Then a series of like 15 to 20 very specific questions. You need to filter out people.
Mm-hmm.
Got it? You need to like really, it's about being vulnerable and authentic. Like this was something I really struggled with for a long time. Because I would just blast out like, come work at VaynerMedia, and everybody would come, but I didn't put them in a position to really filter themselves out. Mm-hmm. You need to like really go there and like be self-deprecating and fun with it. Like, and you need to do physical labor. And then like then you click on, you know, then the video shows one of the people working on it carrying, and they turn to like, this stuff's heavy. You know, like you need to like give everybody the truth. I think the video in itself could become a marketing tool. God willing, it goes a little viral. But I think that's like when you're that specific, I think that, you know, Travis says hire a recruiter. I'm not a fan of that as much, though I love recruiters and I'm sure there's plenty that would be great at it. Mm-hmm. I'm a huge fan of a heavy filter that's very unique to you based on the very big uniqueness.
That's a really good idea. And
it will work.
Yeah.
By the way, and then the first thing I would do once that page is up is email it to everybody who bought the product.
Oh, okay.
Oftentimes, some of the best early employees are early customers of the thing.
Totally.
Oh, interesting. Totally. Interesting. And then, so I wanted to ask you just to sort of change gears here for a second. So right now, everything we do is custom. So mm-hmm. there's some limitations with that because, you know, how long it takes to get the Moss and some other things like that. Should we be looking at repeatable non-custom Moss art options right now? Like, I mean, currently right now, I'm completely sold out until the end of the year almost. And everyone's like, oh, hire more employees. But with the supply chain challenges right now, it's
really
so
hard.
Yeah. Hard. So
have you thought about, are you able to pre-sale?
Yes. Yes. Everything is pre-sold.
Even better. I mean, as long as you make promises to customers, one of the biggest changes I made to my dad's business was we pre-sold wine sometimes that was coming out 18 months later.
Oh, that's interesting.
Now, that was a standard practice in the wine business. It was called futures, right? You would buy the new Bordeaux year before it was even bottled. Mm-hmm. Maybe a little bit less standard in your world, but I will say authenticity always plays. You as the founder, right? Even just you're like, you know, you're just extremely bubbly and positive and like have really like your video just saying, hey, you know, on the product page, hey, supply chain, sure you're all aware, this is just gonna be 6 months out. Because of that, we're even being more aggressive with the price here, da 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 da. I think pre-selling is something that people are underestimating in this moment in time.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, like I said, we have deposits till the end of the year already. So it's, you know.
The other thing is when you're selling at that level, your pricing might be too low.
Yeah. It's really not. That's what's shocking about
it. It really
prices of everything have gone through the roof right now. Linz, I think inflation is closer to 40%.
Linz, I think you're missing something very important. It's really not because you may be premium in your category. You just might not realize how premium your brand is.
Okay. I thank you.
You understand? just because you're $800 and all your competitors are $500, Cartier doesn't worry about what other people sell their rings for. Nike doesn't worry what other brands. You might have just put yourself in a position where you are not maximizing your float in the difference between you and other brands. There's a lot of agencies that don't cost $1 million to get out of bed, but we do, you know? And so like.
Right. But then they get to talk to you, Gary. And that's what's so exciting.
That's right. That's right. But I mean, I think that's the mm-hmm. biggest point here, right? Like clearly you've done something that may have also created that incredible brand arbitrage. And I think that's remarkable. And I would not be scared to try. Listen, one thing I can tell you as somebody who's sold things since he was 5 years old, selling flowers door to door, you can always lower your price.
That is true.
Yeah. And just remember the incredible testing infrastructure you have out there. Do one drop of the exact same thing. Say you have exactly 500 units and see if they sell out in a day. Like when you create this brand on like limited quantities, it's like, great, people want a custom piece. And then they might want three more walls in their house that are done by that. Like just don't be afraid of that testing. And I actually think I really like the idea of even testing higher prices. Honestly, I think the market is crazy right now. And there is almost insatiable you know,
it's also Michelle Lynch, like these governments printed unlimited cash. Yeah. Like we have to recalibrate the world.
Yeah.
America printed 15% of all the money it's ever printed in its history. I didn't finish. It gets crazier. In its history, 15 or 14 or definitely over 10 and below 20% of all the money it's printed in the history of America in an 18-month period during COVID. That money's in the system now,
mm-hmm. Let's
right? And so if blueberries are up by double, then why can't a Moss paint, you know, picture go from 800 to 1300 or at least 999, which is that last dollar before the mental threshold of 1000.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's worth trying. Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely.
Try it out and post about it. Share your story on social. We'll keep commenting and we want to see how it goes.
Awesome. Thank you so much. Can I ask you one more question?
Yeah, let's do one more.
So, you know, I have a small team right now. I love my team. They're my ride or dies and that's so awesome. I'm starting to see like for us to really be able to take it to where I want to go, we're going to need to bring in some more hires and it's going to change the environment probably. How do you guys balance like good vibes, millennial, you know, feel goodness with sort of profitability and, you know, having to stay on the sort of business and numbers side of things? Because I find sometimes I'm a little too soft on one and it impacts the other.
The right to be profitable or the ability to be profitable gives you the right to do whatever the fuck you want. And that's what you have to keep telling your team is that when we're profitable, we have the luxury of being able to launch new products, build new things, support the charities we want, support each other. Like that doesn't exist if this business is not profitable and is not making money. And that people actually understand when you give them reality. I even think the most dreamy millennials, when you look at them dead in the whites of their eyes and you're like, no, this is the reality of how this is going to shake out. And this is why this is the most important. I mean, I tell our team all the time what we're doing is very hard. We're creating a new asset class. We have a lot of people that are in the system that are rigged against us. You didn't come here because this was going to be easy. And reminding people that they can do hard things, that they were built for hard teams, that they have a team that cares about them, that there's a lot of kindness around them. Like that, I think that is what happens. But don't let people, because then other people start controlling the narrative in your company. And you know, this exists because you built it and you dreamt it and you've kept the thing profitable. And if they understand that, you actually stop. As soon as you set that standard, you have a lot less of these conversations and it becomes actually a lot easier.
Okay.
My take on that is yes, comma. I call VaynerX the honey empire. I believe in honey over vinegar. I believe in kindness. I believe in all good feelings all the time because people go faster. when you're worried about the politics, you go slow. Mm-hmm. I believe that business is completely misunderstood. I don't believe in sharp elbows. I don't think that being kind means you're a pushover. I think what you need to make sure is that your candor is on point, a weakness of mine for 20 years. So what you do, what you need to be careful of, Liz, is creating, you know, entitlement, because you're not candorous along with the kindness. And the other thing that you have to remember is, whether you're 4 people or 4,000 people, one human being can change the culture. You've got to cut out cancer when you observe it, mm-hmm. right? So don't be scared about going from, how many are you at?
Well, so we're at four and we're going to hire probably 3 to 4 more.
Good. In the next couple four to eight is a piece of cake to keep everything you want. Mm-hmm. It just might mean that you need to fire person number 6 3 weeks into their tenure. Mm-hmm. Don't be scared of the hiring. The hiring is guessing.
Right.
The firing is knowing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. Which is also one of my least favorite. I'm like, can I hire somebody who will just fire people for me? Because that is my least favorite.
By the way, you absolutely can.
And it makes you a good human that it's hard to fire people. You should never want to take that trait away from yourself.
It's the worst thing, but for me, I hated it, but I will tell you without a shadow of doubt, my core weakness in 25 years was the lack of candor that led to me surprise firing people once I finally got fed up.
Yeah.
Awkwardness. Please, 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 either you can absolutely hire somebody to fire. Make somebody your number two and make her or him in charge of operational hiring and firing, and then Sally or Rick will do the firing. And you'll tell them to. I did it for years. Then I wanted to develop it. But for years, I was like, Dad, you need to fire that person. Bobby, my cousin at Wine Library, fire that person. AJ, fire that. Like, so, you know, and eventually I realized it was too much of a vulnerability to not have the ability to be candorous. I added the word kind to it. And now kind candor has set me free and made me a better operator.
Yeah, because I think that the entitlement thing, I do kind of go back and forth with that a little bit, you know, because sometimes I feel like, well, I'm being so gentle that I'm not getting what the business
needs. That's exactly what is possible. Mm-hmm. And what you need to do is call a 5-person kind candor meeting. Okay. And be vulnerable. Ladies, gentlemen, I find myself being too kind and I'm starting to build subconscious and now it's conscious resentment towards some of you or sometimes on how we roll. I don't want to be that person. I don't want to do that to you. This is what I'm going to need. Maybe in my baby steps to being more candorous, I'm going to send a Friday email on observations. The tone is positive. I'll put a bottle of Jahar emojis. And so this vulnerability, this vulnerability and honesty is an incredibly powerful opportunity.
Yeah. And I think that you have to change your mindset to actually believe it's cruel to not tell the truth. It's cruel to actually not tell people where they stand and how they're doing.
But Michelle, I'm sorry to interrupt, but Karina Z said, I think it's more kind to be blatantly honest about employee performance, right? The problem is blatantly radical candor versus kind candor. Like what ends up happening is people end up delivering it poorly.
Oh yeah. You can't be an asshole, man. No one's going to even listen. They're just going to be hurt.
If you go straight, not asshole.
Yeah.
But if you go straight, there will be inherent fear.
Mm-hmm.
And fear is poison.
Yeah, it is poison. Don't do that, but yes.
But it requires candor, hence kind candor. You have to come with compassionate points of view, you know? And people's, you know, again, Bruce says clear is kind. Sure, you may feel like you are clear, but you have to be empathetic and compassionate to how one receives it. If somebody was parented in a way where they overcoddled everything, any level of clear, proper feedback is received as a negative.
Mm-hmm.
We have to be compassionate to this.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gary, I have to say, I've been following you for like literally 10 years, and this is like so amazing. Thank you so much for your time. I really mean it. It's like meeting so
very
much.
Sweet.
Well,
very
I'm so
sweet.
Happy to get to know you, and it's just been so wonderful. Thank you guys both so
much. You're very sweet. Thank you. And Lindsay, can you do me a favor? can you send me an email to Gary@VaynerMedia and say I was just on the show with you, Michelle? I'd like to buy a Moss thing and hang it up.
That means so much. Thank you guys both. So I'm sorry for getting emotional. This is just a really big deal.
It's amazing. Thank you.
I'm flattered.
Thanks, guys. Big hugs.
Thanks, Lindsay. That was awesome. I mean, what an incredible story. And I think it's, you know, super important discussion about how you have to deal with some of the harder things in business that people don't want to talk about. They want to talk about everything going well. They don't talk about the days that we have underperformers and the days that things are not working and how to deliver those messages. But let's take some questions from the audience.
Please. You've got a system for this, Michelle? Oh, there we go.
Any advice for an administrator with creative leanings without an outlet to explore these dreams? I don't know.
I got a big one, Greg. I really think, Greg, side hustle, you've got to start an NFT project. Please. I'll tell you why. God forbid, aka slang term for God willing, one NFT collector or influencer finds a liking to it. You could be a full-time artist in 5 minutes. If you are creative that way, in visual form, video, drawing, sketching, doodling, please go that route. If it's a different creative essence, look for companies like VaynerMedia. We hire people in creative that have no creative background. They come from administrative, they come from the concrete business, they come from sales. There are optimistic, curious companies out there. Find them.
Oh, there's another good question. How can a small business in the custom apparel business that can't afford the dev work for smart contracts embrace NFTs?
By putting out a tweet with the hashtag NFT and finding somebody who's willing to take a piece of the action to do the tech work for free. Matt, there's a ton of those people.
Yeah, I love that.
Get involved in Discords, Matt. Put in the groundwork like I did when I was starting Wine Library TV. Hours and hours of groundwork on Twitter and Discord. You will find tons of devs to do it for free.
Yeah. Okay. Next one. Just getting started.
Not free. Excuse me. Just for clarity. They'll take a piece of the action. They'll say, Matt, I want 10% of the initial sales and the royalties.
Yeah. And that's fair because honestly, this is not going to get off the ground unless you do it. So I got another one. Just getting out of... started out in the supply chain business and due to container shortages, facing some difficulties, how to keep yourself going through some of these toughest times in your business. Okay, Rohit, container prices are absolutely out of control. I mean, from $3,000, I've seen container prices at $15,000 to $20,000. There is no simple way these are going to come down because ports are full, shipping containers are full. And unless you have massive volumes, it's extremely difficult to negotiate right now. And so I think it is figuring out a way to beg, borrow, and steal and see if you can actually solve the problem, seeing if you can look for manufacturing in other places. But it's actually, I think your question is a little bit different, which is like, how as an entrepreneur do you pick yourself up when you're down? And for me, it's always actually listening to other entrepreneurs, understanding that like even what seemed to be the most successful businesses almost failed like 20 times as they were being built. And then having that circle of friends and founders and other people that are building businesses that can be like, yeah, I mean, I'm in the same shit show as you are. So here's either my ideas or here's how I can solve it. But I think, you know, misery loves company, and that group of my own entrepreneur friends has been critical.
I also think there's moments in time where you can't do anything.
Yeah.
Like, you know, a global pandemic came along. Like, I don't care how good of a businesswoman or man you were in Europe, when World War II broke out, your business wasn't as good, right? Like, that's just real life. And so we are living through a global pandemic where the small group of shipping companies have finally used this moment to create much more margin. And the Walmarts and the Costcos and things of that nature have lost their leverage. And, you know, Michelle, you're more educated maybe, not maybe, in this than I am. I don't think containers are coming down anytime soon.
They are not. All this infrastructure is not there for these to come down.
That's right. So this could be it. I mean, maybe they go down from 15 and 20 to 10 and 12, but the days of three have no rationale to come back unless governments regulate.
Yeah.
And so...
which we'll have no incentive to do, and no.
Right, it's kind of like manufacturing.
Like it's not going to happen. It's just
that's right.
It's dealing with your business.
So what that's going to do is it's going to lead to India, and the U.S. and parts of Europe, and other parts of the world to probably start really aggressively on the 10-year plan, building out manufacturing. Yeah. I think people are, you know, it's okay. This is when you pivot.
Yeah.
You know, Michelle's point is absolutely well taken. But the misery loves company when your business is never going back to that place is, you know, e-commerce came out. It happened, which meant you're never going back to just having leverage as a big box retailer.
Yeah.
Like that, like that, you know, and so containers are here to stay at high prices. Wrap your head around that and decide what you're going to do.
Okay. I thought we were wrapping up, but we got one more. What trends do you see in a post iOS 14 world when it was harder to reach customers?
I'm going to go real fast and I'll let you wrap up the show. Sure. I think people are going to have to get better than just doing math arbitrage on Facebook and Instagram. How about that? Yes, I understand you can't re-cookie and people got very lazy. It was easy to build a DTC brand.
Yeah.
Facebook, Instagram at scale. Big brands didn't understand how big those platforms were. Build a good Shopify, build a good media plan, run good math. Many people in the world are good at math. Go to sleep. It's going to go back to branding and marketing.
And absolute creativity. You will have to get 100% customer attention and get them talking about you influencers, and
totally. Starting your own media company, still doing social media marketing, but doing it from a brand standpoint, finding new ways, building your own first party data. There's a million things that are going to happen. It's going to get harder.
For sure. And I think the best, you know, we talked about this previously, but like this will be like when email just declined and we just had to figure out what that next generation is. It is there, right? It is in new platforms. It's in new ideas. Like it's there, but we're going to have to go build it. Gary, this is so much fun as always.
Great show. Thank you so much for having me as your partner in crime on Fuck Yeah Fridays on this special Thursday, which I'm predicting Thursday will get more juice than people think because we're both very busy and we just might not make some Fridays in the future. Yeah. So this is a lot of fun. Thank you, bio entrepreneurs and friends.
We are back October 8th next week. If you want to apply for the show, go to clear.co/FYF. That's Fuck Yeah Fridays for a chance to be on next week's show. I'm really looking forward to seeing the new folks there.
Cheers. Bye, everyone.